And welcome to Classics at Josie's Cafe. I am here with Paul.
Hey, what's up, guys?
And we have decided to talk about The Shining by Stanley Kubrick. I've been saving this one for a long time. Because The Shining is such a, such an epic, horrific movie. And there's a lot of debate, a lot of different types of ideas of what this movie is. And I myself, I mean, it's my favorite. It's one of my favorite movies. I mean, 2001, I think, is his best movie, but this is my favorite Stanley Kubrick movie. I've gone back and forth since I first saw it, and I've seen this movie like almost probably 20 times. Like, I see it at least once a year, and it's always around Halloween. But yeah, I've had mixed emotions because what I'm going to say today might not be valid on the next viewing. You know, it's just that movie that's just so concentrated with things. Like, right off the bat, what are things that pop out for you?
Definitely, you know, Jack's character, how drawn he is to the hotel. How, because, you know, I've heard a few theories about it and how, you know, Jack might have The Shining. And the hotel, you know, it's this evil entity in the hotel itself, because, you know, being on top of a Indian burial ground and, you know, murders happening, suicides happening in that hotel throughout all those years. So, you know, it has this tainted energy about it. And I think, you know, if the people with The Shining, you know, they are drawn to that and it can influence them. So, you know, just seeing the degradation of his, you know, his patience, you know, his caring for his family, that's one of the biggest things that stood out to me. And I haven't come up with an idea of what it might actually be symbolism for, but I mean, I'm open to anything at this point. But that, and what else? I mean, you know, the scenes are just beautiful. Like, every scene is shot beautifully. It looks really nice. Everything looks super perfect. You know, like as if it was like panels in a comic book. You know, how it should be filmed. And I don't know, a lot of things stood out, so it's kind of hard to just like pick them out. But what about for you?
Whew, man. I think you brought up a lot of really good points. I mean, when you watch a Stanley Kubrick film, even if you don't know what the fuck's going on, you're just mesmerized by how he moves the camera. And he's showing you what he wants to show you. And you feel like every shot is important. Every move is important. So it's kind of like when you see a work of art, and you see a true work of art, something that you're in awe with, you don't just sit there and just see the image. You walk up to it, you know, you see different parts of it. You know, you might see the lower part of the picture and the upper part. And then you see the whole composition, how they brought it together, and you're mesmerized by how they did what they did. That alone, to me, is just, oh my God, it's beautiful.
Yeah.
You know, I don't know how else to say it.
Yeah.
But I'm always drawn by the way that he moves the camera. I love long shots.
Yeah.
And this guy knows how to use them. Yeah. Some people will, I mean, they do long shots and then they do a cutaway and then they come back to a long shot. It's like, I don't know. It's just, you can tell when you watch a movie and it feels like it's just done in the editing room. But with Kubrick, it's like it's in his head.
Yeah.
And he's, when he's doing it, he's trying to do what he imagined.
So do you think he has a big part in picking out the cast?
Oh, yeah, definitely. He does,
right?
Definitely.
Because I think that's another thing, is that he, you know, he only picks actors that he can rely on for those shots.
Yeah, like, if he's a perfectionist, mm-hmm. which he is, obviously, you know, everyone talks about the takes or whatever. Mm-hmm. I'm trying not to, like, talk about things that have been said so many times. But, of course, he's gonna find people that are going to just jump as high as he wants them to jump, you mm-hmm. know, without any questions asked. Mm-hmm. So I think that his casting is essential to everything. Even, I mean, I don't want to jump around to other movies, but Vanilla Sky, just to name that one, I mean, there's a reason why he hired a power couple at that time, mm-hmm. you know, at that point in time for that movie, in my opinion. But going back to Shining, he not only cast these perfect actors, but he also knows what he wants from them.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, there was a lot of speculation with Jack Nicholson, the way that he played it, but it wasn't that Jack necessarily played it how he wanted to play it, mm-hmm. you know? At the end of the day, Stanley Kubrick was giving him orders and
yeah.
telling him exactly what he wanted. He wanted this over-top character, and that's part of what he wanted to portray. Mm-hmm. And that's what people don't understand, is that when you start nitpicking things, instead of nitpicking things, start thinking, well, why did he want him to be playing it this loudly, I guess you could say, right? Mm-hmm. And that's what draws my attention when I watch The Shining. But yeah, the shots are very impressive. But from years of watching this film, and I've heard so many different theories, I think subliminally we understand that this hotel, regardless of how it got there or what it is, we understand internally it's horrific.
Mm-hmm.
Or we think there's something bad that's going to happen. We don't understand why. Mm-hmm. We just inherently know. Yeah. We're just waiting for it. And I think he has a lot of different elements inside that hotel, the way that he gets you lost in it, and also the way it's dressed up.
Mm-hmm.
And what they say, it kind of goes along. You know, they talk about how it used to be Indian burial ground. They have the Indian carpets and like a lot of references to Indian culture. I don't think that's really integral to the story.
Yeah.
I think this is just innately, we understand what happened to them.
Yeah.
And innately, we know it's horrific. Even if we don't think about it out loud, innately, it's within us. And he's showing you this in a space while this linear story is going on. So I think what he was trying to do is take these elements, just make you feel
mm-hmm.
something horrific, right? Without showing you a slasher scene or something like that. I mean, that's my take on a lot of the things that he does.
Mm-hmm.
It's subliminally there. And we inherently just feel it, and then when something happens, it adds to the mayhem. Like, he's manipulating your mind.
Yeah.
And I think that's because, I mean, he's doing it when Danny's just riding around.
Yeah, on the tricycle.
Yeah. So yeah. When I first found out that, you know, you're not really seeing the true layout of this place, and he's manipulating you within the space.
Mm-hmm.
Then you start thinking, well, what else is he doing?
Yeah.
Right? I mean, do you get some stuff like that?
Well, to be fair, I didn't really feel that lost when it came to it. Again, like, I just went in with an open mind, didn't really try and judge, you know, the movie based on, like, what I would think.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I just took it in. So I was, like, more interested in, you know, trying to see what you thought.
Oh,
so,
yeah. Oh, well, I don't want to be talking all the time. So here's the thing, man. Mm-hmm. Because the first time I see it, I'm kind of like, what the hell is going on? Like, okay, there's this boy that can essentially read minds.
Yeah.
He's a bit telepathic.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, the first time you see the linear stuff,
mm-hmm.
then you start watching the movie again and you start seeing like kind of like the background, the way he's dressed, what they're saying,
mm-hmm.
kind of like you're picking up on the dialogue and what they're saying between the lines kind of mm-hmm. thing. Well, so it keeps adding up little by little.
Yeah.
I'm to the point now. I'm just going to jump now. The idea of Danny. Just the idea that there's this kid born with a gift.
Mm-hmm.
And this kind of goes along with society now.
Mm-hmm.
And this is why it kind of opened my eyes. I didn't have an iPad when I was his age.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? But these kids nowadays have access to all kinds of stuff.
Yeah.
That I didn't have access until, like, what, 1998?
Mm-hmm.
And then when you're in 1998, you're doing all kinds of crazy shit because you're going through puberty, you know? But now these kids have access to all kinds of stuff.
Mm-hmm.
So then I'm thinking, well, Danny, if he can read minds, the first people he's going to read minds from is going to be his mom and his dad.
Mm-hmm.
And you're thinking, what is he seeing in these people's minds?
Mm-hmm.
And you start thinking of a regular person, what they think about, and you're like, oh, hell no. Like, he is seeing some real fucked up shit.
Mm.
And he doesn't understand what this shit is. And I think that's part of this problem. The problem is that he's so young, and he's picking up on all these things. And I think that's what really starts to fuck with everything.
Mm-hmm.
Now, you could argue. Do you have anything to say about that?
So do you think Tony was a coping mechanism for him? Like, you think he really, you know, embrace Tony's presence because of what? Because obviously we know he was abused when, you know, the doctor's there and she's asking questions about Danny. And she's like, the daycare thing comes up and, you know, Shelley's talking about it. And she's like, but, you know, we had to pull him out because he had a bit of an accident. And then they go on talking about how he got his shoulder dislocated because of Jack. You know, he yanked him too hard. So do you think Tony was a coping mechanism to stop from being able to just read their minds?
Yeah, I think I do. I think that's part of his psyche.
Mm-hmm.
I think that's what this has a lot to do with. I think Danny's psyche is really affected.
Mm-hmm.
And this translates to Jack, too.
Mm-hmm.
I think that you can make the argument that this is hereditary.
Mm-hmm.
And so if Jack has it, he's losing his mind too.
Yeah.
So they kind of both, in my opinion, are causing all these weird shit to happen.
Yeah.
Because it's in their fucking head. And I don't know if Jack, that's the thing. Like, I think Jack drinks because of that.
To block it.
Yeah, to block it. And, you know, he has this really strange relationship with his son.
Mm-hmm.
You know? And they're both losing their mind. I think that's inherently what's going on in the story.
Mm-hmm.
And then, you know, his mom is just kind of stuck in the middle of all this crazy shit. Because, I mean, what else would happen if you were a kid with that power, you know? And that's I think that's inherently the idea behind this. Like, if we could, there's that Twilight Zone episode where that guy learns how to read minds, right?
Mm-hmm.
Well, he doesn't learn, but he works, he's like bank teller, and he can read minds. And that idea, I remember seeing that when I was a kid. I was like, man, like, inherently, I remember thinking, oh, that's really cool. But then as the episode went on, you're like, oh, yeah, yeah. I didn't even think of the cons about this, right?
Yeah.
It's kind of what you're showing it just in a deeper subconscious level with mm-hmm. The Shining.
True. Yeah.
I kind of feel. So, which leads me to, you brought up Tony.
Mm-hmm.
I can argue that Jack has his own Tony. With the
bartender?
The bartender. No one sees him. He's the only one that sees him. And the thing about it is, I was always confused why, because they spoke about the caretaker, right?
Mm-hmm.
And I think we get that confused because we think, oh, it's a caretaker. But a caretaker, why would he be a bartender? Like, why would he be a waiter?
Mm-hmm.
You know? Like, that's not a caretaker. And so what I thought about was, this is in Jack's head.
Mm-hmm.
The party's in his head. The drinking is in his head.
I agree. Like, I think what was happening was the entity in the hotel was trying to assimilate him, you know? Like, with Grady, the past caretaker, you know, making him a servant to help influence Jack, because, you know, he tells Jack when they're in the restroom, he's like, well, you're the caretaker. You've always been the caretaker. You know, trying to get a little emotional attachment to the entity. And I thought that was really interesting, just because he was so easily influenced by it. And I guess it was just, I guess Jack was just looking for something like a quick pleasure, or I don't know how to word it.
Escapism.
Yeah. Yeah. Cause you know, like he mentions the stress of, you know, if he left the hotel, he would have failed. And that, you know, he was, yelling at Shelley, like, what do you want me to do? Work at a car wash? You know, well, I forget, like, but he mentions all these, you know, these low end jobs, and he's upset about it. And I think, you know, he was so easily assimilated because he wanted that success.
Yeah. So that leads me to my next point. For the longest time, to that point that you just brought up, mm-hmm. which is a really good point, I thought about Stephen King writing a lot of that, right?
Mm-hmm.
And also Kubrick as an artist identifying with that. And, you know, you play music, I play music, and you write too.
Mm-hmm.
You write short stories, and I do too. So I think there's a point in life where we realize, in order for us to do the creative things that we like to do, that we kind of have to grow up a bit.
Mm-hmm.
And take care of our adult self, you know? And I think that's what perhaps Stephen King and Kubrick went through also, because you're not a child anymore. You're growing up and you're becoming a man, and you're having to establish a foundation to mm-hmm. take care of yourself and your family. And I think that's important too in regards to growing up. It's kind of like the Peter Pan complex. Some people just, they never grow up, and it's a trap.
Mm-hmm.
I hate how Disney depicts that as a good thing, but mm-hmm. that's not, I don't believe that's what really we were supposed to understand. We were supposed to understand that there's a finite time that we have.
Yeah.
With the crocodile and the time mm-hmm. and inside of him. That's Father Time kind of coming to devour you, kind of thing. And Peter Pan's trying to run away, and he doesn't want to grow up. And you have the opposite with Captain Hook,
mm-hmm.
who he's scared to become that.
Yeah.
He thinks that he's going to become, like, essentially a businessman, someone that's looking for their treasure, which is the golden egg, I guess, right? Mm-hmm. He sees that as fruitless life, I guess. But there comes a time where, you know, you got to have that balance. You got to take care of it. So I always, I don't want to say always, because this kind of happened more when I started entering my midlife. I think when I was like 25, I saw the movie and I was like, oh, I'm kind of identifying with Jack.
Mm-hmm.
What he's writing, you know, all work and no play and all that shit. like, I kind of identified that because I'm like, oh, fuck, now I got to go to work. Mm-hmm. Like, I hate work, and you would be grumpy. Like, fuck, why do I have to do this? And you talk about menial jobs. You start thinking about that. Like, fuck, man. Like, your parents are telling you, get a good job, blah, blah, blah. And it's like, why would I want to do this? This is my life. This is my passion. I want to do this kind of thing, right? Mm-hmm. That's what Jack's currently doing. He has a family, mm-hmm. but... You know, he wants to write that book. He wants to do his art, and he's losing his mind because he doesn't want to let go of that dream, I guess, you know?
And let me see if I can actually get this thought out. I feel like a lot of artists themselves, they create characters that are similar to them. Like, you know, Stephen King writing about other writers. And there's also... I'm going to give JoJo's Bizarre Adventure a quick plug, but in JoJo's Bizarre Adventure Part 4, the creator of the series, he creates a character that's a manga artist as well. And, you know, they go through these struggles that these people might not have struggled with in, like, for a very long time. But, you know, they've struggled with that before. They've had that struggles. You know, they've had that not being... as big as they are, and then having to do other shit to support themselves.
It's very interesting, yeah. Mm. Yeah, and I think anybody who's an artist, or not necessarily an artist, but anybody who has a passion, might be a sports athlete, or, I don't know, someone that does carpentry or something, any important hobby that they do, they feel like it loses them, you know, like time stops when they do those things, and they realize they have that moment where they have to be an adult, and no one likes to wait in line to pay for some BS or go through a bureaucratic maze of bullshit. Like, it's just not fun for anybody. And if you say it's fun, well, great. They do my bills, right? But I think we all have that realization where we wish we could, like, I wish I could just pick up the guitar and just play, you know? But before I can pick up that guitar, there's a laundry list of stuff I can do before I can safely sit down and play without my conscience saying, you shouldn't be doing this.
Yeah.
It's just part of growing up and being responsible, I guess.
Yeah.
A lot of people are like, oh, you're such a nerd, you're such a whatever, like, just fucking play, man, live life. But sometimes you just can't, man.
Yeah.
You know, there's shit you need to do. You need to take a shit sometimes. You fucking need to feed your stomach. Like, you have two brains, like, god damn.
Yeah, I was gonna say, you need to eat.
right. And, yeah, that's one of my problems, believe it or not, like, fucking eating. I can, you know how it goes, you'd be deep, lost in it, and, you know.
Yep.
My wife will come and just be like, you need to eat, and I know she means well.
Yeah.
And I mean, that's why it works, right? Because she cares about you and you care about her, and that's why you make the world go around anyways. Moving on. But yeah, Jack's kind of dealing with that, and I started noticing, like, you know, he not only types that, but the way that he actually moves in the hotel, like, he's throwing the ball around. You know, what adult does that?
Mm-hmm.
You know, that's like his inner child screaming out.
Yeah.
That won't die. And I kind of feel that, part of me feels like the reason that's happening also is because, you know, going back to him and Danny having this weird symbiotic relationship, in a way he struggles with that because... maybe him being in kid's head or something, or being able to get into a kid's head, you know, gets him drunk on the idea, no pun intended, about, like, living a life like that, a life pure with pure joy.
Yeah.
Because Danny has it, but then Danny has a lot of nightmares because of his dad.
Yeah.
You know? Which leads me to the next thing. Which we'll talk about the room.
Mm-hmm.
And for the longest time, I was like, why is this happening, you know? Like, why is this happening? And the only thing I can think of is the idea of Jack, you know, being single and being able to still have this beautiful woman.
Mm-hmm.
That, you know, when you're young, you have this idea of, like, a beautiful woman that you want to be with, right? It's very childish.
Mm-hmm.
And then her degrading in front of your eyes, it's really just a metaphor for what's happening to you,
mm-hmm.
you know? And he's scared of growing old, mm-hmm. in a way, you know? So that's interesting. And then another crazy thing is that Jack's the one that hears a story about the twins being mm-hmm. slain.
Yeah.
Danny is not there, but he hears it because he's in Jack's mind.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
So then when he sees them, it's because it's in Jack's head.
Mm-hmm.
So it's like these imprints. So you start thinking, like, what happens in the room, like, Danny knows.
Mm-hmm. Well, I think it's also just because, like, the hotel itself likes to bring up these past images. Because, you know, towards the end, Shelly starts seeing shit, you know. She sees the bear, the person in the bear costume, the furry giving, you know, head to someone. And then, what was it? The ballroom where everyone was just, you know, skeletons and it was everywhere. And then what Danny had been seeing throughout the entire movie, the blood, you know, rushing out of the elevators.
Yeah, it's really interesting. If we go with this Danny theory and this childlike, it's just this power by a child.
Mm-hmm.
So imagine when you tell a child, you give them strict instructions. Like if you were to give them a description, hey, tell this to this person, it's going to get fumbled, right? It's like playing telephone. Like by the time he gets over there, he's going to say his understanding of what it is.
Yeah.
So here's an idea that I thought. Because if he's the one doing this, like he has seen Jack in the bar scene too.
Mm.
Like he's seen what he did. And he has learned that Jack wants to kill his family. So that's where he gets the murder thing from, right?
Mm-hmm.
So he knows this, but he doesn't know how to like vocalize it to his mom.
Yeah.
So here's an idea. This is just a theory, which I may be completely wrong. He kind of puts this stuff to his mom's brain.
Okay. So you think the images that she saw were just Danny influencing her?
Danny telling her, like the best way that he can say, mm-hmm. like, hey, he went to this party and then he's going to murder us kind of thing.
Mm-hmm.
But this is the only way that he can understand. Okay, so think about it. Let's put it in words.
Mm-hmm.
So Jack went to a bar and they had a 1940s party,
mm-hmm.
and he had a drink with the butler and talked about murdering us. Now, we take it like a child would say it, and it's like Jack went here with a bunch of old dead people. Mm-hmm. They're not here anymore. And he's going to he's gonna slash us.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? Like there's loss of translation there.
The only thing what I would question is the bear cost the furry.
Oh yeah. Giving the blood. Oh yeah, yeah, yeah. So in the beginning of the movie,
mm-hmm.
He picks up a Playboy.
Oh, he does?
You see Jack Nicholson picks up a Playboy. So if he read something there and he doesn't know quite how to articulate it,
mm-hmm.
might transfer into that moment. Maybe they talk about furries in the magazine. I don't know. I mean, it's all like fucking theory, right?
Yeah.
But I don't know. That's the weirdest part of the movie that I still don't understand.
So what I think that scene was the hotel itself, like the entity feeding off of, you know, well, what's his name? Dick Halloway. Like, he ended up, you know, getting murdered by the axe. And I feel like, you know, that he also had the shine.
Right.
So I feel like the hotel was feeding off of his energy and then feeding off of Jack's energy as well. So these events got enough, there was enough energy that these imprints, because like Dick Holloway said that, you know, you'll see imprints, but they're just like pages on a book. But, you know, there was so much
shit energy, that happened there. Yeah.
You know, someone dying and it feeding off of Jack, that these imprints started becoming visible to the naked eye.
Ah.
That's what I think it might have been.
Yeah, but that is interesting.
It does make sense for like what you're talking about, like how Danny would try and influence his mom, because she was lost. Like, she didn't know where he was at all. So, like, I feel like he might have been guiding her. And, you know,
might be a combination of things.
Yeah.
The only reason I bring it up is because he's going through like a seizure when all this shit's going down.
Yeah.
So it's like he's exerting that much force to imprint this shit on her brain. But now that I think about it, maybe since they mentioned it, maybe it is an energy thing.
Mm-hmm.
And he's trying to connect with his, that's why I think it's so crazy, because if he's trying to connect to her and there's these imprints happening too, mm-hmm. then she's fucking like, what the fuck's going on?
Yeah.
And we're thinking like, what the fuck's going on? Yeah. So yeah, that would make sense. And now that I think about it, it kind of connects the party with that room with the furry thing.
Mm.
You know what I mean? Like, it's like, oh, well, a bunch of fucked up shit happened. Of course shit like that would happen because it's a fucking hotel.
Yeah.
So yeah, that's really interesting. Something that you reminded me of is there's this podcast. It's like a science podcast. I forget what it's called.
Mm-hmm.
But they were talking about how there's a theory out there, talking about just energy in general.
Yeah.
And how scientists has this theory about like adamant, just regular objects able to store memory.
Yeah.
And if they're able to, have you heard about this?
No, but I've heard something like that, similar. Imprints, yeah.
Same. Okay, yeah. So I guess this is along the same lines.
Yeah.
And then he talked about how if that's true, then, you know, this whole idea of energy, negative and positive energy, is highly likely, especially with locations, across the United States, if there was like great wars or horrific things happening. These are imprints that stay there.
Mm-hmm.
And they've already started to like test certain things, like, because they're just looking at energy. That's all they're looking. They're not even talking about like paranormal shit. They're just talking about energies in general. And they're bringing it down to a mathematical, trying to bring it down to a mathematical understanding.
Mm-hmm.
And I thought that was interesting, because the first thing that I thought about, they didn't even say this, but I started thinking about like true psychics, and now I'm getting all crazy. But people who say that they're what are they called? Mediums. Start thinking about things like that. And I know there's some that have, like, I understand the parlor trick behind it, but what if there is a validity
mm-hmm.
to at least places where, you know, you walk in and there's, you just inherently know, like, oh man, there's something weird about this.
So I believe that there is, you know, the whole positive and negative energy thing, because when, you know, gardening, you know, you're encouraged to talk to your plants, to be nice to your plants. And my girlfriend even has a story about how they had these plants outside on their doorstep, and one of her godmother's mom, I believe, she came by and she like gave the plant ojo, and like the next week it was dead.
Crazy.
Or not the next day. I think it was like the next day. It was dead.
Crazy.
Like
it died.
Yeah.
I mean, that's so interesting. And you know, now that you bring up the imprints thing, it makes so much sense inside the hotel. It would make so much sense if that's what it was. Because let's go back to the Native American thing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
If there was like a massive genocide there,
mm-hmm.
that energy is still in that hotel.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah. There's like, you know, people call it, like they can call it a curse, but it is sort of like a curse. But yeah. Yeah. Yeah, there's just like the theories that I've heard, that, you know, it's just like a negative energy in that hotel that takes over the hotel.
Yeah.
So like the, or like did you ever watch the Dark Tower, the movie?
Yeah.
So you know, in the beginning where the kid, before he goes into the other dimension, like he's in that house and the house attacks him. That's exactly what happened in the hotel, except it's instead of the hotel attacking them, it was, you know, bringing up these past events.
Yeah, I think you're right. I think it kind of like you're bringing your fuel into it.
Mm-hmm.
The fact that Danny and both Jack and Danny have this power, it's like intensifies things mm-hmm. in a way. Man, that is nuts. And it's no, you know, the Dark Tower thing. It's not like a, I mean, they're Stephen King's. They're both in the same kind of.
Yeah, the same universe.
Universe, yeah. So that has to be it, right? That mm-hmm. has to be it. It has to be this imprint bullshit.
Yeah, because, I mean, like I said before, you know, Dick Halloway says it, you know, they're like pictures in a book. But with enough, you know, enough energy with Dick getting killed, his, you know, shining going away. I, you know, the way I interpreted it was that, you know, when he was killed, his powers were released, you know, into the world.
Right.
And he was in the hotel that was already feeding off of, you know, energy off of Danny and Jack. So I feel like it just kicked up the, you know, turned it up to 11.
Yeah, now that I think about it, the whole beginning scene is kind of like, if we're going into these forces, like, it's like we're just seeing them being drawn to this mm-hmm. hotel. I mean, he knows to draw them there.
Mm-hmm.
The only other thing is, Doc, like, he understands, and he tries to guide Danny.
Oh, you mean Dick Halloway?
Dick Halloway, yeah.
Yeah, I called him Doc before, too.
Yeah, I think it's because...
well, he calls Danny Doc,
because call him. Yeah, exactly. And... I mean, that's an interesting scene, because he's trying to kind of guide Danny. And he's mm-hmm. he can't tell him too much because he's just a kid.
Yeah.
So that's a really interesting... I think that's probably like one of the most important things in regards to figuring out what's mm-hmm. going on in Danny's head, is that conversation that mm-hmm. they try to have. Because I think it's more than what they're saying, you know?
Mm-hmm.
There's something more going on, because he's like, oh, yeah, I can do that too, kind of thing. Like, oh, shoot. Like, what else are they transferring over? And then, yeah, it's just. But Doc Holloway, or what's his name?
Dick
Holloway?
Yeah.
Like, obviously, it'd be interesting to make a story out of him and how he dealt with it as a child.
Yeah. I mean, there probably is, you know, Stephen King writes so many fucking stories with, you know, using characters he's used from other books. There probably is, honestly, because I think I remember reading that, you know, Danny's in a few other books as well.
Yeah. Yeah, they have Dr. Sleep, I think, which is like after The Shining and stuff. Oh, man. Yeah, that's... The imprint thing is for sure. I mean, looking back, I think Jack struggles... As a character, I think that's true, too.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, the whole idea of how Danny's dealing with the powers, I think that's part of it. So, man, it's crazy. Like, I do feel like I have a little bit more understanding of this fucking movie, but there's so much going on, but yeah, it's a monster. Oh, no pun intended again. of a movie. I mean, there's so much going on.
Yeah.
And but inherently, you know, it is talking about a lot of things that we all innately fear.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the fear of aging. You know, the fear of growing up, and Danny's the stuff that happens to Danny. I mean, you don't want that to happen to the child at all.
Yeah.
So.
And just being like, because you know they mentioned at the beginning that they thought the reason that what's his name, Grady, killed his family was because you know, cabin fever.
Right. I mean,
and that is still, you know, an issue as well, is being secluded.
Confined.
Yeah, secluded with, you know, two other people for, very what was it, like time. 5 months?
Yeah.
Something
yeah,
like
yeah.
that. I'm not sure how long they were supposed to take care of the hotel, but, yeah, I mean, being secluded like that, it takes a toll on your mind as well.
Yeah, I mean, it's a multitude of things that's going on in this movie. Like, for instance, Shelley is kind of doing the caretaker role.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah, she's doing all the repairs.
Yeah. So, I mean, that's just the other interesting thing. There is a lot of color red in this movie.
Yeah.
Which I know has to signify something.
Mm.
I don't quite know. I mean, you have the red burgundy jacket. Danny's wears red. I think his tricycle's red.
I don't remember what color it was. I can't remember.
And then the bathroom scene. Yeah. And obviously the wave of the wave, the blood red thing. And then at the end, the guy holding the glass with red liquid in it.
Oh, yeah.
And the only thing I can think of is that's Danny's, or it might be an imprint. I don't know. But, yeah, I don't know. It's just a lot of little things that still we'll never know what he meant by it.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, we probably don't want to know because it's no fun. That's the thing about Stanley Kubrick movies, is he intentionally got rid of all his notes because he didn't want you to know. He knew this, that... I guess he knew the magic trick, right?
Mm-hmm.
If you tell people the magic trick, then it doesn't live on.
Yeah.
And that's part of his movies, is that there's really nothing out there to tell you what he really meant by it.
Mm-hmm.
And I think if he did, then I don't think people would have anything to talk about. They talk about how great the movie is, but then nobody would watch it.
Yeah. I mean, people are still making conspiracy theories about this movie today, so...
Yeah, yeah, yeah. The whole moon landing bullshit, like, that's just ridiculous. You know, whatever.
I don't know too much about that, but I know, like, it was supposed to be, like, he directed the moon landing, the fake moon landing.
Yeah, and the numbers and all that shit. Like, nah, fuck you. Like, it's not that. No. I don't know what he meant by the rocket ship thing, even if that meant anything, where he's wearing the rocket ship with USA and he's like, mm-hmm, launching off. I think maybe it was just a joke,
because, mm-hmm,
you know, everything kind of looks like a launch pad and he stands up. I think we were just supposed to chuckle to it.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe that's what it is. There's like a lot of like little jokes.
Yeah.
And we're taking it so serious. Like, oh my God, yes. And genocide and...
reading too far into it.
Yeah, and he's just like fucking with us. He's like, oh yeah, this is just fun, guys. It's a movie. It's popcorn. Like, god damn it.
Let's see. Trying to think about what else I wanted to talk about. Can't really remember. And my notes don't really go that far either. While I was watching the movie, my dogs were making a mess, so a lot of my notes just didn't get put down. But let's see. So what was the symbolism about the numbers? Like, I've heard that there is conspiracies about that, but I just don't I've never really looked into it.
They talk about how it was, like supposedly like the date that it got filmed, mm-hmm. things like that. I don't know. It's just, but see, here's the thing. When you gotta look at it like Occam's razor, right?
Mm-hmm.
When you start kind of connecting the dots and you're like making the fucking dot, like it's just like you're just trying to find something, you know?
Mm-hmm.
So I don't really believe in that. I really don't believe. There's a whole documentary that talked about how they compared it to all the past America atrocities that it's done, like leading to Native Americans. And at first it started off strong, and then I got halfway through it and I was like, oh God, this is just BS. 'Cause it was just bringing a bunch of like left field facts and, you know, trying to put them together. And
yeah.
I was like, I'm watching like a really long YouTube video right now. Like, it's just ridiculous. They're forcing it so bad. They even got down to like, the head guy, he looks presidential and he's John F. Kennedy during this. It's like, how are we supposed to know all this? And they even talked about they compared it to like the ballroom where he walks in, how he wanted it to be a certain color and how they made it the wrong color. And he came in and said, no, it has to be this color. And he's like, he was so meticulous. The reason he wanted to do this, because this is around the time they changed the gold standard. And so, you know, to the, it followed all that to the end of the picture. I think it says 1911.
Mm-hmm.
Like, this is when the National Bank was invented. And as you see here, there's five people pictured, and they're the people that came up with this, and they're all Freemasons or some bullshit. Like, I don't know. It's just like, it's insane.
So it sounds like they're really reaching for him to like answer some of their conspiracy theories.
Yeah, kind of. Like, yeah, it's just, he's like, he's telling us the truth. I was like, yeah, but there's one that I just started laughing, because there's one that he's like, this guy, and they zoom into the picture, you know, with Jack Nicholson's like all laughing,
because
it's a weird part of the thing, but you know, he's being consumed by the hotel, right?
Mm-hmm.
He consumed them.
Yeah.
Well, you know, it's funny that we say, good thing we didn't leave that out, but that's his imprint left on the on the thing, right? So they are saying that all these people represent these bankers, and then they zoom into every individual one, and they bring up actual pictures of these people that supposedly set it up. The Federal Reserve, I think, that's mm-hmm. what they're talking about. And this guy looks like Groucho Marx. And I started laughing, because he's like, oh, and this guy was the second seat of this person who was in charge of doing this and blah, blah, blah. And I'm like, yeah, but he could also be Groucho Marx. Like, you know, with his cigarette. Like, like, are you telling me that, like, Kubrick did all this research and implanted these people strategically there? You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, is he that meticulous to where he's like, I'm going to give the secrets about this government occult, and they're going to figure it out with The Shining. They need to know. Like, I think that's just crazy.
Yeah.
You know, like...
Yeah.
He just wanted to make a good horror movie. He wanted to make like the best horror movie. And yes, he used subliminal messaging, but it was more so for your mental psyche to get freaked out.
Mm-hmm.
It wasn't to put out the lies and the conspiracies about, you know, what we really are.
Yeah.
We are all like owned by the Illuminati and the Freemasons.
Yeah, it was just Stanley Kubrick's aesthetic.
Right. It's
what he likes.
Exactly, is what he likes. And people, I think people gravitate to that conspiracy that he's like trying to uncover, like these atrocities and the Federal Reserve and all this shit, and World War One, world government conspiracies, because he made Eyes Wide Shut. Have you seen that?
Oh, I've seen a little bit of it. I haven't seen the entire thing, though.
Okay. Well, we'll just leave it at that, because he basically talks about, well, yeah, the occult and things like that. But I have my own theories about that movie. But, you know, like we talked earlier before the podcast about how people take things and they make it their own. And that's kind of what they're doing, is they're taking these movies and they're making them fit their world.
Yeah.
And you're just like, dude, like Jay-Z, Illuminati, Beyonce, like maybe, I don't know. Like, I guess. And they're all like, you know, they killed, the Illuminati killed Kubrick. And I was like, I think old age killed Kubrick.
Seriously.
You know, do you see how old he was? Like, he looked like he was going to pass out on the 30th take of fucking Kidman and Tom Cruise. Like, come on, man.
You know what's funny is that, you know, with these conspiracies, there's the biggest of these elites. Like, Alex Jones talks about it all the time. Of these elites running a child sex slave ring. And, but, like, a lot of people like to pick up on that and like to go with that conspiracy theory. But then they're not as interested as when, you know, the Catholic Church is exposed to doing that shit, or from doing that shit.
And that's real.
Yeah, and that's real. You know, like, where's their, you know, their fighting spirit to help these people? Because, I mean, like, these priests, these, you know, archdioceses, they're resigning, but none of them are going to jail for covering it up. Like,
and also, that's just a tip of an iceberg. Those are just people that just happening. Like, they know this is a problem. They've known for years and decades that this is a problem. But these are kind of the people that are kind of like the scapegoats.
Mm-hmm.
That's all this is. That's what people don't realize. You know, I'm very critical, because I have firsthand accounts of things that happened in the church I was involved in, you know, and just weird shit that happened. And it wasn't like I had to hear from somebody. I just kind of felt it. Like, I mean, I didn't get filled. No one felt me, but I'm just saying. I knew something was fucking wrong. Yeah. Whenever, like, a priest just has to get relocated for some odd reason, and then there's somebody that doesn't come to church, you start kind of thinking, there's something weird here.
Yeah.
Like, I'm not going to put two and two together, because obviously it might be coincidental. But all I can say is I saw the priest's car at a certain place, which happened to be my neighbor, a lot, every Thursday. And I don't think they were just, doing Bible verses. You know what I mean? Like, like, come on. And then she moved away, and he never came to the, he got transferred or whatever. And I have other personal reasons why I kind of know something went down.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, for this example, I've always known, like, something's weird, you know? Just the fact that this happens and it gets swept under the rug, like, that's the sinister part of everything.
Yeah. Yeah, definitely. And, I was actually listening to NPR about, talking about stuff like this, and, they're saying that, you know, there's a statute of limitation on, being able to prosecute these people, which is after the victim turns 50. And that's fucking ridiculous. Like, there should not even be a statute of limitation on that.
At all.
Yeah. Like rape, molestation, you know, all that shit. All that horrible, horrible shit that causes trauma. Like, there should not be a statute of limitation. Like, someone can, you know, defend themselves and, you know, kill someone and then get charged for murder while they're defending themselves. I mean, it's not likely anymore because, you know, there's, well, I also watched Adam Ruins Everything and he ruined forensic science a lot. But, you know, there's still ways to determine if someone was just defending themselves. But, you know, someone can go down for accidentally murdering someone for life, you know. And, you know, a murder, there's no statute of limitation on that.
Yeah, it's ridiculous. It's just ridiculous. That runs, like, it's been a known thing, runs rampant.
Mm-hmm.
And people just throw a blind eye. Like, that's how crazy this world is.
Yeah.
And then, you know, I guess it's because it's more stimulating to think that there is an occult that does this.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? Like, I mean, I know there's been accounts, true accounts, where it's like underground shit and they've been caught. I mean, that's for sure. But I mean, we can sit here and talk about all kinds of different ones, the possibilities of there being one, but the fact that there is one in bright daylight, no one's doing anything about it, it's the scariest thing.
Yeah, seriously.
Yeah. Damn you, Shining.
And speaking of, you know, kids being sexually abused, there was, that sounds terrible, speaking of that, but, there was a theory on, about Danny being sexually abused by Jack. What do you think about that?
Yeah, I mean, I thought that was a given. I didn't even bring it up because I kind of felt like it was something that's just known. From this movie, when I first watched it, even when I was a little kid,
mm-hmm.
watching that scene where he's talking to the therapist made me feel dirty just watching it.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, the way that he sets up the shot, the way that he's sitting there, the way he's playing with the bear and the bathroom and everything, it's like, you know, inherently, you know,
mm-hmm.
like, you just know, like, there's something weird about this. And I don't think I should be watching this. Mm-hmm. Nothing's happening. But, you know, Stanley Cooper is a smart motherfucker. And he's like, you know, out of all the horrific things that human beings do, this is something.
Yeah.
Watch. Pay attention. Like, if you do that, you're a fucking shit. So I just think he, it's not only implied, it's something that he wanted you to see.
So I didn't pay too much attention to that. So what is the thing with the bear?
Oh, man.
Because if you think about it, then it might support your theory of Danny trying to communicate with his mom.
Maybe,
because
maybe
that would explain the furry giving a blowjob to you.
Perhaps. For me personally, and just looking at that scene, it has always made me feel a bit, what's the word I'm looking for? You know, when you're doing something that's suggestive,
mm-hmm.
that's kind of what that scene is to me.
So it made you feel a bit uneasy?
Uneasy. His gestures with it is a bit suggestive. It's something that maybe Jack makes him do that, you know, he's not comfortable with.
What were the gestures?
Just the way he touches the bear.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? I don't quite, like, remember right off the bat, but if we were to watch it,
mm-hmm.
like, we can pause it and watch it scene if you want.
Sure.
All right, we'll be right back. Okay, so we just got done watching the scene, and...
Mm-hmm. So, I definitely could see why you would associate it, you know, with him being sexually abused. I feel like there wasn't a whole lot of evidence just in that scene, though, to... for me to agree with it completely. Like, there is the later scene where Danny finally begins to understand that his dad's losing his mind. So he's, you know, he goes in for his fire truck and he's trying to be really, really quiet. So Jack ends up being awake anyways, and no, Danny is a little reluctant to go to him, but, you know, Jack calls him over and sits him on his lap. Looks a little weird, but I can see, you know, when you're talking about the scene with the doctor, you know, how he looked like he was in defensive posture. And it was weird that he had his underwear off, but, or he only had underwear on. But I feel like throughout the movie, it was, that's where I would be able to agree with you.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, those two scenes are kind of like, you know, there's a strangeness to their relationship. It's just, I mean, maybe also how they're talking, and it's just weird, the position that he's in, and then he's like, you know, Tony lives in my mouth kind of thing, and then he goes to my stomach. Like, it's just, I don't know, it's just weird.
Yeah, at first I thought it was just, you know, a kid's imagination, just weird shit, you know, like, could have been, it could have easily been, you know, he lives in my ear, lives in my thumb, but mouth is definitely a weird location, especially when you're an adult and you're interpreting it.
Yeah, yeah. The mouth thing, I mean, I think the reason why you could connect both is because, I mean, he says Matt, this is so crazy, right? But maybe he just wants to, I don't know what this is, but, you know, just the posture he's in, and then he says mouth, he's covering his, you know, he's covering his shit. And he's in defensive posture, like you're saying, and then, like, the things that she's saying is, like, do you ever see any strange things? And then he's like, it lives in my mouth. And then kind of, you take that scene, and if you were to just put the scene where Shelley is seeing the bear thing, the weird fuzzy thing, whatever, you know, it kind of resembles the bear in a way. And then maybe innately, it just, I don't know, maybe your memory kind of reminds you of the bear sitting beside Danny. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And then so you just associate the bear with that guy dressed as a bear, and the act, you just identify that with Danny. I don't know, maybe that's what's fucking with our minds, and maybe that's what he intended.
Yeah. And like, I totally agree with, you know, these just being, or being possible, it being possible that these are just fragments of Danny's, you know, memory. And, you know, I mean, it was an older guy that the furry was giving a blowjob to, which, you know, that could be his idea of his dad. But I was just trying to figure out, you know, the symbolism of the tuxedo. Maybe it's because his dad is assimilating to the hotel.
Yeah, that's what I thought. I thought, I mean, if you go back to the boy becoming an adult thing, the tuxedo symbolizes him kind of, you could argue, assimilating to the hotel or him growing up, which might be the same thing, you know. Essentially, this movie might be just a big thing about the human condition as a whole.
Yeah.
And someone being scared of losing themselves to this big machine that we are is inherently. A hotel's a big corporate thing. And, you know, Jack's trying to fight this, and he gets gobbled up in it. So, I mean, you could see it that way, too. It's just, all I know is that it's a complete contrast from what Jack's wearing now.
Yeah.
So it's a lot, you know, a lot of little subtle things within, and it's kind of like a good novel where inherently there's a linear plot, you know, where we talked about earlier, like there's a knight shining armor, a guy in a knight, he's a knight in shining armor. He's trying to rescue the princess and kill the dragon, but everything's a symbolic to something. And so the story itself is, oh, cool, man, he did this, he did that. But then you go back and you start realizing what these things might mean, and in a deeper conscious level, it helps you become a better human being.
Yeah.
And you could argue that in The Shining, it's a family and they get hired for this job. Hey, they get cabin fever, and then he kills everybody, and these guys happen to have superpowers. That's the linear plot.
Mm-hmm.
But deep rooted in the consciousness is something bigger than that. And,
yeah.
And something that, as an artist, or just a normal human being, like I said earlier, we deal with. And you can get lost in this maze of life. And if you're not careful, you can just fucking die.
Yeah.
So it's, in a deeper sense, you're going to walk through the horrors of past experiences of things that have happened in the life that you are just walking by. Because you're not the only person that's done this.
Mm-hmm.
There's previous people that have lived there, and they've all either had a great grand old time, hence to the dance, or you've fucking had a brutal fucking death. But that's life.
Yeah.
That's the game of life, yo. And, you know, I think in a deeper sense, that's really what you have to remind yourself, is that life is full of beautiful things and also full of heinous, terrible things.
Mm-hmm.
And that's just what we are as human beings.
Yeah. Very chaotic.
Yeah. So, I mean, fuck, man. That's why we could argue and we could talk about all these different things of what this means and what the bear means and everything. But all we know is that us as human beings, we're just fucked up.
Yeah.
You know, we're a spectrum of things.
Mm-hmm.
And I think with everything he was trying to show us,
mm-hmm.
I think, because there's a lot of tender stuff in there too.
Yeah.
And he kind of wanted to, that's his way of saying, you want me to give you a horror movie? Well, this is my horror movie. This is the shit we've done, guys. We've established the Federal Reserve and
fake the moon landing.
And fake the moon landing. You know, we're fucking monsters. Right? Oh, man. I'm being sarcastic for anybody that doesn't understand sarcasm. But yeah, it's a great movie.
Yeah.
We could sit here and talk like forever and ever about it. That's why it's a fucking classic movie.
Mm-hmm.
Whew, man. Happy Halloween, motherfucker.